17 text 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurun Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Pancha Kalpatarubhyas Chakripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, text 31. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Udvahatam Nrinam Jnana Vairagya Viryanam Nahi kaschit pyapashaya. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Udvahatam Nrinam Jnana Vairagya Viryanam Nahi kaschit pyapashaya. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Udvahatam Nrinam Jnana Vairagya Viryanam Jnana Vairagya. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Udvahatam Nrinam Jnana Vairagya Viryanam Nahi kaschit vyapashraya. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Udvahatam Nrinam Jnana Vairagya Viryanam Nahi kaschit vyapashraya. Vasudeve. To Lord Vasudev, Krishna, Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhaktim, love and faith in devotional service, Udvahatam, for those who are carrying, Nrinam, men, jnana vairagya, of real knowledge and detachment, viryanam, possessing the powerful strength, na, not, he, indeed, kaschit, anything, vyapashrayaha, as interest or shelter. Translation, persons engaged in devotional service to Lord Vasudev, Krishna, have naturally perfect knowledge and detachment from this material world. Therefore, such devotees are not in therefore, such devotees are not interested in the so-called happiness or distress of this world. Purport, here is the distinction between a devotee and a philosopher who speculates on the subject matter of transcendence. A devotee does not need to cultivate knowledge to understand the falsity or temporary existence of this material world. Because of his unalloyed devotion to Vasudev, this knowledge and detachment are automatically manifested in his person. As confirmed elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.27, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhaktim Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyasu Vairagyam Gyanam Charyada Haitukam. One who engages in unalloyed devotional service to Vasudeva Krishna automatically becomes aware of this material world, and therefore he is naturally detached. This detachment is possible because of his high standard of knowledge. The speculative philosopher tries to understand that this material world is false by cultivating knowledge, but his understanding is automatically manifested, but this understanding is automatically manifested in the person of a devotee without separate endeavor. The Mayavadi philosophers may be very proud of their so-called knowledge, but because they do not understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, they do not understand the world of duality, which is a manifestation of Vasudeva's external energy. Therefore, unless the so-called jnanis take shelter of Vasudeva, their speculative knowledge is imperfect. Yenye ravindaksha vimukta maninaha. They simply think of becoming free from the contamination of the material world, but because they do not take shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva, their knowledge is impure. When they actually become pure, they surrender to the lotus feet of Vasudeva. Therefore, the absolute truth is easier to understand for a devotee than for jnanis, who simply speculate to understand Vasudeva. Lord Shiva confirms this statement in the following verse. So some of you might be wondering why I have this presentation about how Radha is revealed in the Vedic literature when I don't even think Radha even came up in this verse and purport directly. So we'll get there. This is going to be an example of one of the points made in the purport. So this is a pretty famous verse. Well, this verse along with at least two other verses in the Bhagavatam, or this verse is pretty much the same idea as two other verses in the Bhagavatam, so this idea is really important because it's repeated multiple times. So here, Lord Shiva is continuing to glorify Chitraketu for being a very nice devotee, and particularly glorifying his ability or his lack of interest in material happiness and material distress, how he's kind of detached from the whole thing. And Lord Shiva was commenting that, you know, for devotees, this knowledge and detachment that you're exhibiting, Chitraketu, it just comes naturally by one who performs bhakti. This is the idea mentioned in this verse. The idea, you don't have to independently try to cultivate knowledge and detachment by themselves. These kind of come as side products, or just, you know, it comes automatically if you just perform devotional service unto Krishna. You know, like the example Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is like eating something. By eating, along with eating, simultaneously while along with eating, you get pleasure, nourishment, and you also get detachment, or at least relief from hunger. So similarly, if you perform bhakti, then automatically these other things come, like knowledge and detachment. It's just kind of like concomitant factors. So in the purport, Prabhupada describes that here is the distinction between a devotee and a philosopher who speculates on the subject matter of transcendence. So devotees, they try to understand transcendence or absolute truth by performing bhakti. That's their method by which they go about trying to understand transcendence. Philosophers, on the other hand, they take a different approach. They try to cultivate knowledge to do this, to understand the absolute truth. So Prabhupada kind of points out later in the purport that one of the defects of trying to cultivate knowledge to understand the absolute truth, or using that methodology of only cultivating knowledge to understand the absolute truth, it's it's ultimately going to be imperfect because you're not going to be able to understand that Vasudev is actually the you know, that from which everything is manifesting. So here the example is given that you know, Mayavad philosophers or philosophers in general, they might be able to study the Vedic literatures or some philosophy and understand that this material world is, there's some duality in this material world, that it's temporary. And, you know, maybe it's, they'll come to the conclusion that it's false or something. But they won't necessarily come to the conclusion that Vasudev, this material world is just manifestation of Vasudev's external energy. Certainly they might not have realization of it. They might be able to philosophize that that's the case, but oftentimes when people, philosophers, they try to understand transcendental literature, they oftentimes, you know, they don't come to the proper conclusions. I mean, this is one thing when you're talking about, you know, the falsity or temporary existence of this material world, but when we're talking about just the absolute truth in general, usually this is where devotees and philosophers, they kind of diverge, because they don't come to the same conclusion. So one example of, I was trying to think of an example of this, and I just happened to read something from Navavajra Mahima recently, which I feel is a good example of which shows the difference between a devotee and a philosopher, and how both of them try to understand the Vedic literature and how they ultimately come to like just a different conclusion altogether. So there's this article in Navavajra Mahima called How Radha is Revealed in the Vedic Literature. So you, one of the things that, at least from in the academic world and, you know, philosophers in general, A lot of them, they don't accept Radha is the personal feminine aspect of the absolute truth. Even if, you know, they've studied the Vedas, they've, you know, pretty, I guess, in depth, but they don't accept Radha as being a component of the absolute truth, or being as being that important, really, when it comes to what the Vedas are all about. And to give two specific examples of how the philosopher, how academics, they come to this conclusion, there's two authors that kind of highlight what the view of most academics think of what they think about Srimati Radharani. So Barbara Stoller Miller, she wrote this book, Love Song of the Dark Lord. It's Gita Govinda, translated by Jayadev Goswami. She translated it into English. And if you go on Amazon and you type in Gita Govinda, you know, like the book, this is the one that comes up. It's like the most popular Gita Govinda out. So if you want to read it, this is what you're going to read. And we're going to hear what she says about Radharani and about everything. So this is what we're dealing with out there in the academic world. And then she also wrote another book called Radha, Consort of Krishna's Vernal Passion. And so she's like kind of attributed for popularizing Indian classical literature in the United States. And then there's this other author, A.W. Entwistle. Apparently this author wrote the book Braj, Center of Krishna Pilgrimage. So they both have a similar view about Radharani's position as being a component of the absolute truth, and they're reminiscent of so many other academics and scholars out there. But I'm just, these two were highlighted. Okay, so here's a kind of like a summary of what their arguments are. You can go in depth if you read these, but I didn't read the books. But these are some of the points that they made. One point is that if Radha's position in the Vedic pantheon is so philosophically significant, why is she not mentioned more prominently in the Vedas? So they claim that Radharani's name, much less her glories and pastimes, are rarely, if ever, mentioned in the Shrutis. So the Shrutis, they're like the kind of like considered to be the most authentic portion of the Vedic literatures. You know, they include the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas, along with their commentaries, the Brahmanya, Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. So these are kind of like the universally accepted books that are considered to be Vedic. They're kind of like the most authoritative when it comes to anything Vedic. If it says it in these books, then it's generally accepted across all spiritual traditions that accept the Vedas. They claim that Radharani's name isn't even mentioned in the Shrutis. So how could her position be so important if it's not even in the Shrutis, which are the most important Vedic literatures? And then they say that when Radharani's name is mentioned in the Smritis, so they do acknowledge that Radharani's name is mentioned in the other part of the Vedas called the Smritis, there is doubt about its authenticity. Because they say the Smritis are not as authentic as the Shrutis. The Smritis include the Puranas and Vedic literature that kind of came after the original Shrutis. So there's doubt about who authored what, and there's doubt about, you know, there might have been things added later on to the Vedic literatures, to these Smritis, and and there's a lot of new ideas presented in the Smriti literatures, so it's not as authentic. So not everybody accepts the Smritis and those who follow the Vedas. I guess it's something like the Old Testament and the New Testament kind of thing in Christianity. Some people are very orthodox; they'll accept the Old Testament as to be totally truth. But they won't accept the New Testament because it came later, and who knows, it's by dubious authors and whatnot. So it's something similar with the Shrutis and the Smritis. But the Smritis themselves, they also say that they're kind of broken down into certain Puranas that are in the mode of goodness, certain Puranas that are, not the Puranas themselves are in the mode of goodness, but they're catering towards those in the mode of goodness, catering toward those in the mode of passion, and catering toward those in the mode of ignorance. So Radharani's name might be mentioned in these other Puranas, but they might be under the different modes of nature and therefore not necessarily considered to be that philosophically important in the whole context of the larger Vedas. Another point they point out is that when Radharani's name appears in the Smriti, there is an inconsistent image of Radha. So like there's a description of Radha being the wife of Krishna, and then that's in the Puranas, and then there's another description of Radha being one who cursed her brother over some disagreement. She cursed her brother. And then there's another image that we get from the Puranas of Radha living in Vaikuntha-like opulence. And there's like these little like scattered references about Radha all, you know, here and there throughout the Puranas. And they don't give a really consistent image of who Radha is, let alone that she's the ultimate goal of life and that she's a feminine aspect of the absolute truth or anything like that. You wouldn't come to that conclusion if you were just reading these Puranas perhaps by themselves, with the mentality of trying to cultivate knowledge only. So their conclusion, succinctly put, is Radha is the product of a literary tradition incorporated into Bengali Vaishnavism during the 15th century, around which Chaitanya's followers developed an elaborate theology that has seen worldwide revival over the last 50 years or so. Is that how everybody feels when they read this? That's their conclusion, yeah. Anyway, when oh, the second half's okay. The second half's okay. The first half is what usually makes devotees cringe, that Radha is just a product of some literary tradition. we don't like to hear that. But this is their conclusion. This is what you get when you try to speculate about subject matter of transcendence. Okay, so that's their argument succinctly put. So now we're going to go over kind of like the Gaudiya Vaishnava response to this, these claims. First, we'd like to, we kind of have a different idea of what the difference is between Shruti and Smriti Shastras. Jiva Goswami's Sandarbha is one of the first things he tries to establish is that the Shrutis and the Smritis are equally Vedic. That the Smritis are just kind of further elaborations on what the Shrutis are. And there's one quote in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which we use to kind of back this claim up. It said it's quoted from the Vedic literatures, but I don't know if it's specifically identified which Vedic literature they get this from, but this is a quote used in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When the mother Vedas, Shruti, is questioned as to whom to worship, she says that you are the only Lord and worshipable object. Similarly, the corollaries of the Shruti Shastras, the Smriti Shastras, give the same instructions, just like sisters. The Puranas, which are like brothers, follow in the footsteps of their mother. O enemy of the demon Mura, the conclusion is that you are the only shelter. Now I have understood this in truth. So here saying that they're equally Vedic, they're like sisters, they give the same instructions, like that. But the other thing about the Shrutis is that it's generally accepted that there's really only 6% of all of the non-Puranic literatures in existence on the planet today. Only 6%. That's a pretty small portion. And that small portion is pretty a lot. So even if Radha's name isn't mentioned so much in the Shruti Shastras, we really only have 6% of them still in existence today. So we don't really know how many times that Radha appears in the Shruti Shastras because we don't have them anymore. The only thing that we have access to now is, see, how we have access to some of the Shruti literatures now is through our previous acharyas or great saints in the past quoting from the Shrutis. So that's the Shrutis themselves are not in existence anymore, but we have the acharyas who quote from them, and we have their writings which are still in existence. So that's it's always a little difficult to really kind of to say, because they'll be quoting from some Upanishad that nobody's ever heard of that's not in existence, but apparently was in existence 500 years ago, and they were studying it. Okay, but Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they do say that the Radha does appear in the Shruti literatures. So here are at least three examples of Radha appearing in the Shruti literatures, Shastras. So here's an example. This was the scene for this quote came when, I guess, Krishna, who's named as Gopal, this appears in the Atharva Veda, in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, which is considered authentic. So Gopal was hanging out with the gopis in Vrindavan, and at one point, Gopal sent the gopis to go see Durvasa Muni for some reason or another. This is like the background to this quote. So then there's a quote that says the leader of the gopis named Gandharvi had a quick discussion with her friends, and then questioned the sage Durvasa Muni. So here Radharani, we say that Gandharvi is Radharani, although her name's not mentioned there, but we just say Gandharvi is another name for Radharani. And we take this to mean that Gopal is the absolute truth and his eternal consort is Gandharvi or Radharani. So that's how Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they use this to perhaps justify that Radharani is indeed mentioned in the Shrutis. This is one example. Another example comes from the Rig Veda Parishishta, They have the Sanskrit there, Radaya, Madhavo, Devo, Madhavena, Charadika, Vibrajante, Janeshva. Madhava becomes especially beautiful by Radha's side, in the same way that she is especially beautiful beside him. Together they outshine all others. So this, you could actually see, actually the name Radha is mentioned twice, and this is in the Rig Veda Parishishta. So what the, I guess, academics, how they comment on this verse too, but they say that Madhava in this verse, Madhava means the springtime in which the Radha star shines brightly. So this is how they kind of translate this verse. So they say that Radha in this particular case, although it's there, it doesn't refer to Srimati Radharani, you know, Krishna's consort. They say it refers to a star. Of course, we don't think so. I mean, our acharyas, they say, no, this is Radha and Madhava. This is Krishna and Radha, you know, Srimati Radharani. Okay, so that's another one. Then there's one more. This is from the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad. And apparently this Upanishad, it mentions Radha's name four times. It mentions Radhika's names three times, the name Radhika three times, and it mentions Krishna 12 times. So here's one of the times that she's mentioned. In the supreme abode of Gokula in the district of Mathura, Srimati Radharani and Srimati Chandravali Devi stand at the left and right side of Lord Krishna. That Srimati Radharani expands herself as Lakshmi, Durga, and many other potencies of the Lord, which are all her incarnations. And it goes on to say that those other potencies, some of those other potencies are Chandravali, Lalita, Shyamala, Bhadra, different gopis that are expansions of Srimati Radharani. So this is just like a something that I don't even know if the academics quote or. At least as far as I'm aware of, they don't, I don't know if they comment necessarily on this particular verse. So we disagree. We say she is mentioned in the Shrutis. So although academics they don't so much accept the Shrimati Shastras, sometimes they do. And they still comment about Radha appearing in the Shrimati Shastras. We, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we accept the Shrimati Shastras to be equally as good as the Shrutis. If not even a little better, but certainly at least equally good. So there's many examples of Radha appearing in the Shrutis. I'm just giving one example here from the Padma Purana. Yata Radha Priya Vishnos Tasya Kundam Priyam Tata Sarva Gopishu Saiveka Vishnor Atyanta Vallabha. Just as Srimati Radharani is dear to Lord Vishnu, so her lake, Radha Kund, is also dear to him. Of all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Lord Vishnu. So the academics, they comment on this verse. One of the things that they say is that this is a crude exclamation aimed at elevating Radharani's position in the Orthodox Vishnu cult. This is what they say. You know, this is their commentary on this verse, is that this might have been, you know, either incorporated as late as the 16th century into the Padma Purana or something. They don't give so many explanations. They just say that this is perhaps like the way it is. And they also say Padma Purana is not even really like the highest layer of the absolute truth or anything, you know. So like anything found in the Padma Purana, like, so what? It's not really what the Vedas are all about. Okay. So there's so many quotes. I'm not going to go through all the quotes that where she's found in the Smriti Shastras, but here's just a list of all the Puranas and Smriti Shastras where the name Radharani appears. The thing is, we don't measure Radharani's importance based on how many times she appears in the Vedic literature. Like, that's not the measure we use to say it, whether she's important or not. That's one of the arguments that the academics use against her being important, but we say that's not really an important factor. But still, the academics, they have this argument that, well, we see an inconsistent picture of who Radharani is given in the Smriti literatures, so how can you really, harmonize all of these different images and say that she's so important that she's whatever? So the way we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas kind of harmonize this challenge is that we look to the Bhagavatam. So this is the second thing that that Jiva Goswami tries to establish in his Sandarbhas, is that one, that the Shrutis and the Smritis are equally Vedic, and two, that the Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It's spotless, meaning it's pure, it's totally perfect. It was written in Vyasadeva's maturity, like these things. These were all. So if you can, so everything that if you can establish something based on the Bhagavatam, that's the most Vedic. That's like the conclusions of the Vedas. So the idea is that, so we can, but still, how are we going to harmonize what the Smritis say and what the Srimad Bhagavatam says? So one way we can do it is we can say that the whatever the Smritis say about Srimati Radharani, that's it, it kind of c covers or conceals the real Radharani with veils of the modes of material nature, whereas the Srimad Bhagavatam presents the real Radharani, because we learned earlier that the previous Puranas and everything, they're meant for people in different modes of nature. So that's one example. But you might be surprised, or at least I was surprised to know when I first found out that Radharani is not even mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So how are we supposed to try to establish Radharani as being the absolute truth when she's not even mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and we're having a difficult time in the Smriti literatures, like figuring out who she is? So there's a few reasons why Srimati Radharani is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. First reason is that Krishna likes esoteric stuff. Although she's not mentioned by name explicitly, she's hinted at indirectly. And Krishna likes this kind of talk. He doesn't, when things are like very blunt and straightforward, it's not as fun and as exciting as if it's indirect and discreet. So here's a quote from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that says, "Vedic seers and mantras deal in esoteric terms, and I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions." This is Krishna speaking, that he likes. It's nice. So the second reason that devotees, they like esoteric stuff too. One, I guess, idea mentioned in Nava Vraja Mahima. This is Shukadev Goswami. This is like a paraphrasing of what Shukadev Goswami is feeling in the Bhagavatam. He says, "If you are qualified to hear about Sri Radha, then you will understand and be pleased when I speak of her indirectly." Because devotees who are very pure, they can understand who Radha is just by hearing about her qualities or her conduct or her behavior. They can identify immediately that's Radha. They don't need it to be told explicitly. Plus, it's poetic. It's nice. It's more pleasing to the devotees when they hear descriptions of Radharani as opposed to just like directly saying this person is Radharani. So then the third reason is that it may not be advantageous for novices to directly approach the highest conception of the absolute truth right away. So, that's I guess that can make sense, because if immediately you hear about the highest conception of the absolute truth, then you, without understanding some, I guess, initial some Bandha Gyan or some just general basic knowledge of the philosophy, then very easily you can have misconceptions about the absolute truth, and you can commit offenses, and thereby furthering not allowing you to be able to understand the absolute truth. I say that if you are qualified to hear about Radharani, then you'll be able to see her in the pages of the Bhagavatam. If you're not qualified, you can't. Which is expertise of Vyasadeva that he can present it that way. Or Shukadeva Goswami. So then the fourth reason comes with, because Shukadeva Goswami is the one who's speaking most of the Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. And his identity is actually Srimati Radharani's parrot. So he's, you know, they say that the love that the gopis feel for Krishna is like a flame burning. It's like a really intense flame that's burning in their hearts. And anybody who comes close to them, then they also get affected by that those intense loving feelings. So since Shukadeva Goswami is so like attuned to Krishna's or to the gopis' moods, that if he were to directly say, you know, the name Radharani, he would just kind of go into this ecstasy, and he wouldn't be able to like finish the Bhagavatam. You know, he only had 7 days to speak the Bhagavatam to Pariksit Maharaj, and if he were to mention Radharani, he would go in this like really long ecstasy, and he wouldn't be able to finish. So it's another reason, I guess, why Radharani's not really mentioned by name in the Bhagavatam. But even though she's not mentioned directly, there's still at least three, if not more, cases where she is mentioned indirectly in the Bhagavatam. So, first example comes when Krishna disappears from the Rasa dance, and all the gopis, they're searching around, where's Krishna? And then they go into these different kinds of madness, and then they see Krishna's footprints, and then they follow Krishna's footprints, and then they see, oh, there's another set of footprints there. And they identified it as, oh, that's another set of footprints. That gopi must be very fortunate to go off with Krishna, because Krishna left us and wanted to go off alone with this gopi. So in this section, this verse appears, certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. So here the Sanskrit in this verse, the gopi who perfectly worshipped the all-powerful Lord, the Sanskrit there is Aradhita, Aradhita. And Aradhita, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the way they see that word is that Radha is hidden within that word, Aradhita, Radhita. Of course, academics, they say, well, I don't know if that's really what Shukadev meant, intention was, that or that Radha is hidden inside the word Aradhita. Anyway, so that's one example. Another example of Radha appearing in the Bhagavatam was, I guess, when I guess Krishna comes back, and all the gopis, they welcome Krishna in different ways. And there's a description of how each gopi, you know, I guess, responds to Krishna coming. So there is this, so here's the quote. One gopi, beside herself with loving anger, bit her lips and stared at Krishna with frowning eyebrows as if to wound him with her harsh glances. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he analyzes this verse. And he says that this particular verse is describing Srimati Radharani, because the, I guess he was describing that the jealous anger is one of like a possessive kind of love, and this it's characteristic of one who is quarrelsome and has like a I don't know, like a different, like a, contrariness, I guess, is was also described in the Bhagavatam, quarrelsome and contrariness. And they say this is really only exhibited in the personality of Srimati Radharani. So elevated devotees, they can be able to understand who somebody is just by hearing descriptions about their conduct and how they respond to different circumstances. So this is an example of that. Oops. Oops. That doesn't work. Yeah, can you... There's only one more example. There's a little full screen button there next to the 74% on the bottom near that little scroll bar, plus and minus. Yeah, so, yep. And the one right next, right? Yep, that one. Yeah, I can hit that. Okay, so this is another example. And then the final example, Radha appearing in the Bhagavatam, comes when, you know, Uddhava comes and sends message to all the gopis that, you know, and then the Uddhava tells the gopis all how what Krishna is up to and how Krishna is doing. And then this sent all the gopis into like these ecstatic thoughts of Krishna. And then there's a description here that says, one gopi was so much absorbed in thoughts of Krishna by dint of her personal touch with him that she actually began to talk with the bumblebee who was flying there. So the Sanskrit here, which describes that one gopi, is kachit. So, and then this gopi goes on for 10 verses talking to a bumblebee in this divine madness. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes that each of these verses are characteristic of, each verse of the 10 verses is characteristic of the, like the 10 qualities that are exhibited in divine madness, ultimately culminating in this Mahabhav, this the most exalted love for Krishna, which can only be seen in Srimati Radharani. So then our acharyas say that this one gopi is Radharani, although she's not mentioned by name. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava conclusion is that Srimati Radharani is indeed the feminine personal aspect of the absolute truth, and that she is the ultimate goal of the Vedas. Of course, if we're not qualified, then we won't be able to understand that by reading the Bhagavatam or other Vedic literatures. But you know, we can become qualified by chanting Hare Krishna and hearing from those devotees who are qualified to understand these things. So I thought this was a nice, just an example of the distinction between devotees and philosophers, how they usually come to different conclusions while studying the same Vedic literature. Okay, is there anything anybody would like to add? Yeah.
Thank you so much for class, Prabhu. That was really thorough.
Well, I'm just presenting what was there in Navaraja-Mahima, so...
Well, thank you for exposing us to it, then.
Okay.
So it's easy to dismiss the academic scholars, you know, interpretation, but what about other sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas, you know, I mean... Is it that our realization, I mean, logic itself isn't going to lead to these conclusions. It's logic tinged with a certain type of bhakti samskar. So is that an explanation?
Yeah, I mean, other sampradayas will still accept Srimati Radharani as a feminine aspect of the absolute truth. That's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least they accept that she kind of exists as Krishna's eternal consort. That much understanding is there. Scholars don't even have that understanding. If they're a bona fide sampradaya, then they'll at least accept that. Now they might have other differences and details about a specific form of the Lord that they're attracted to, and different, you know, they might have different ideas as far as, you know, Krishna being the, you know, the like that from which all the other avatars expand. We say Krishna is the source of all avatars. They say that all avatars are equally Vishnu or something. So anyway, there's like little differences in Sampradaya, but there's not, as far as absolute truth go, they do accept that, but they say like Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan, and all these other forms of Vishnu and Vishnu's consort, they're still like the absolute truth. Of course, our Gaudiya Vaishnav acharyas and everything, we have a particular mood, we try to approach Krishna, we like to approach Krishna and Srimati Radharani and Krishna, and that's the way that we're kind of directed in our Sampradaya. So, anyway, I don't know if that's okay.
That's good.
Luke wants to add something.
Hare Krishna. I'm grateful for the question. It's really, I think, important to be comfortable understanding the opinions, perspectives of the other sampradayas. Because ultimately, Lord Chaitanya seems to have wanted to like unite all Vaishnavas throughout the world, because he took these two principles. We hear he took two principles from each of the four sampradayas. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, following in the same mood, at this I think it was the first temple he established for the Gaudiya Math, but it maybe wasn't the first, but one of the very initial ones. He installed deities of the four founding acharyas of each of the four sampradayas. So this example of seeing the unity in all of them and being able to respect and cooperate is really essential, it seems. But yeah, as you said, definitely we have our particular conception, our particular understanding, which is coming from our acharyas. And they have their understanding. Each sampradaya has certain unique differences. Prabhupada, in one instance, I don't recall the reference, but in one instance he said, so what is the difficulty? They say Vishnu is supreme. That is the nature of love. They're developing love of Vishnu, so that's the nature of love. If you love this person, you'll think they're the best. So, in addition to that perspective, our acharyas have gone to great lengths to establish it is almost like a logic, establishing how Krishna is the supreme. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami, he lists the qualities of Krishna. And he explains how there are qualities that Lord Shiva possesses beyond the ordinary living entity. Then there are additional qualities that Lord Narayan possesses. But then there are four qualities that Lord Krishna possesses that even Lord Narayan doesn't possess.
Sri Vaishnavas don't like to hear this analysis.
So they don't like to hear these things. Yeah, they don't like to hear these
Not
things.
At all. They get real.
They may have counter arguments and all these things, but it's really difficult, I would say, to present a stronger argument. I haven't heard any counter argument to Rupa Goswami's analysis of Rasa Tattva. Service to the Supreme Lord in Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, etc. That it's within the realm of logic and just almost common sense that the more intimate one gets with the object of worship, the object of love, then that love is intensified. So we don't see, at least this is my understanding, maybe you're aware of a counter argument. But in the worship of Krishna only, is there this intimate association?
I don't know so much about what the Sri Vaishnavas say. I've heard that they also have ideas of... Anyway, you can turn this off now. I don't know. I have a friend in Urbana-Champaign who says he's from the Sri Vaishnav tradition, and he had issues every time Mother Donna Keeley brought up this description that you said about the qualities of the different forms of God and everything. Like, he had a very difficult time like accepting that, and he wrote these emails to Donna Keeley saying, well, here's the Sri Vaishnav understanding of all this. And he, what he said that the Sri Vaishnavas, I didn't look at it so much, but I'm not an authority on the Sri Vaishnav tradition, but he said that he has all of the relationships with God. I don't know how it works. I didn't ask. I don't know if this is even a genuine Sri Vaishnav understanding. Maybe not. I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, this is one, I don't know what kind of references he has or whatnot, but that's one thing. And then he's saying that, you know, they do teach conjugal, you know, the conjugal relationship with God.
Now I'm recalling actually Parikshit Maharaj. No, sorry, Prithu Maharaj, I think. One of the personalities in Bhagavatam, I recall praying like that, to let me, may I have a similar type of worship as Lakshmi Devi. But still, this is in a reverential mood. So
anyway, Lord Chaitanya jokes with, what's his name?
Balabhabhata.
Balabhabhata.
Yeah.
He just kind of jokes with them about it. You know, he kind of poses this, you know, similar argument to try to, you know, establish Krishna and Radharani as, like, I guess.
Yeah, they talk about how Lakshmi Devi tried to enter the Rasa Mandal, but she couldn't.
Right.
Because she wasn't willing to follow in the footsteps of the gopis.
And I think, like, the conclusion of that discussion was, oh, don't, you know, I don't know how like Lord Chaitanya, I have to look at it again, but I got the mood when I first read it, like, oh, that's just, he just kind of joked with them, like, oh, I'm just joking, I'm kidding, let's go move on with our, you know.
Yeah, obviously, you know.
It wasn't like a serious issue.
Well, yeah, so it seems appropriate to adopt a mood of mutual respect.
Yeah, so that's,
you know,
the most.
We have our acharyas, and they have their acharyas.
That's what we say. We don't know what they say or anything. I haven't studied it so much, but we can just say what our acharyas say, and this is why we believe what we believe. And you might believe something different. That's okay. At least it's still the Lord. At least according to what we believe, and you're approaching, you know, the absolute truth. So it's great. But as far as, like, you know, we're the best and you're not, and, you know, like,
no, yeah, yeah,
putting people down thing, like, that's not supported by any of our charts.
Well, yeah, definitely not to their face. But we do see our acharyas, you know, really speaking somewhat dismissively of elevation to Vaikuntha.
Yeah, that's, like, that's their mood, though.
Yeah.
You know.
But that also is,
and tattva, I guess.
That's right, that's right,
so
yeah.
That's their mood, and so that's how they say things.
Yeah, so we're also developing that mood. But in the association of persons who are developing a different mood, it would be disrespectful to say that.
Right.
There was a essay by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he mentions in the association of persons, you know, who only have a certain conception of God, it's inappropriate to try to speak on a higher conception. Like, for example, people are understanding, like, God is omnipotent, he's omniscient, and he's all-pervasive, right? The kind of stock understanding of monotheistic traditions. To try to enter into speaking about the personality of Godhead, rasa, tattva, all these things, it's not appropriate. In fact, it could constitute one of the 10 offenses to the holy name, because it's speaking to the faithless. At the same time, we can respect and appreciate their level of worship, and in more intimate sangha, then these things will be discussed, naturally, because that's our real goal, you know, is to experience bhakti ras.
Yeah, makes sense. Those are good points.
Anyway, Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Okay, anything else anyone would like to add? Okay, well, here, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Brahmachari meeting in the meeting room. Hare Krishna.